Weekly Pulse on all things green and gold with the three-time Wisconsin Sports Writer of the Year, Jason Wilde. I'm Alex Strofe with you as he takes a refreshing sip of ice water on this Thursday morning. It's Weekly Wilde. Yeah, because you're a drinker. Yep, absolutely. Here at 8:23 a.m. on a Thursday morning. Packers get a big win Sunday over the Seattle Seahawks, now 10-4. They win and they are in the postseason on Monday night against the New Orleans Saints. Lots to dive into with the three-time Wisconsin Sports Writer of the Year, Jason Wilde. Good morning, Jason. How are you?
Great to be with you, Strofe. Thanks for having me.
Great to be with you as well. No insincerity in your voice whatsoever. I got to see you earlier this week, which was very nice, in the Gruber Law Offices, one called Edsel Studio here at the Avenue in downtown.
You were dressed impeccably with your purchases from the TikTok shop.
Here I go again. Here's another one.
Are those made in sweatshops? What's the story there?
Wow, you're just cutting right to the chase, huh?
I don't know. I don't have TikTok. I'm not willing to use TikTok. So,
do your children have TikTok?
They do not. No.
So you're anti-TikTok in that household.
I am. We caved on Snapchat, which I don't love either. But a bunch of Sydney's teammates from both volleyball and basketball were on it. They communicate that way. So we had a cave on that. I don't love it, though.
So how about, like, the Facebook, Instagrams, Twitters of the world?
They have Instagram.
Okay.
Where they like to post their photos and their little stories. But they've been very, knock on wood, very responsible to this point. They do not have Facebook. I created a Twitter account when they were born, not realizing that Twitter was going to take the turn that it has. So they have accounts that they've never used.
Did you see that the owner of Twitter is anti-hashtag now? They said not to use hashtags anymore.
Elon Musk said that?
Yeah, yesterday. He said hashtags do not feed the algorithm anymore.
Yeah, I don't. Hate feeds the algorithm, from what I can tell.
That was good. That was good. All right, 30-13 over the Seahawks. What'd you make of that one?
Big win. Hey, big win. Very exciting.
Well, in all seriousness, though, Jason, when it comes to that win for the Packers Sunday, 30-13 over the Seahawks, it was definitely their best start of the year. They scored on each of their first four drives and got off to a 17-point lead at halftime. Offense, I don't want to say it stalled, but it certainly did not do what it did in the first half and the second half. But when you build up a 17-point cushion, especially against a team that's teetering on whether or not it's a playoff team, that's typically good enough to get a win, which it was Sunday as they win by 17. All in all, I left that one feeling encouraged about where this Packers team is at, especially defensively, even with the offense scoring the 30 points it did.
Yeah, I'm glad you left it encouraged, because I feel like you're one of those Packers fans that was apprehensive about this team or didn't feel the level of confidence that you wanted to feel about it despite a 9-4 record. So that 10th win having an impact on your vibe about them is a good thing. I do find myself wondering if we're just holding them to an impossible standard. Like, so they score on their first four possessions. You know, they run the ball down the Seahawks' throat with, I mean, I've asked others about this. I asked Brian Bulaga this on our show the other day. I mean, he played in Green Bay for 10 years. He never, ever had an opening drive where they just gave the ball to the running back over and over and over again. Tausch didn't remember ever doing it with Amon Green.
Wow.
So to be able to do that, and Matt LaFleur said the first three plays were scripted to go that way, and then he liked the results of those three plays, so he just kept feeding Josh Jacobs. But to, as you put it, they scored on their first four possessions. That has not happened very frequently this year, where they've scored on four consecutive possessions. I don't know how many times that has happened. And yet the onus or the focus seemed to be on, well, yeah, but then the second half, you guys didn't really do anything offensively. Okay, I guess. I mean, you know, it was 23-13 when they threw the touchdown to Dobbs. And, you know, I never felt after halftime they were ever really in danger. And then they lose Geno Smith on top of it. Then I knew there was no chance of a comeback. You know, I will say this. I think the turning point of the game, though, despite the offense playing the way it did, was Carrington Valentine's interception. I mean, you know, you think about it, it's 17-3 at that point. and you feel like, okay, they're in pretty good control, but it's like 3rd and 9 on the 12-yard line. Like, if he throws a touchdown there, it's 17-10. The Packers, do they bungle the time that they have remaining in the second half like they did anyway?
You are so proud of your use of the word bungle there.
I do love
the look word at that bungle. Smile.
and then, you know, the Seahawks are getting the ball to start the second half. I mean, that's one of those scenarios where you can go from 17-3 to 17-17 like that. Right. And then suddenly you're in a dogfight. So I don't think that they were ever in danger. But that was a big play, and I think it's a quality win. And you can ding them for Sam Howell being terrible or them losing their center, who you heard Chris Collinsworth credit multiple times with solidifying their line. Those were both factors, there's no doubt. But bottom line, pretty good win. And now we'll see what they can do as a 14.5-point favorite and then see what they can do in Minnesota.
Yeah, lots to dive into with that line specifically. Obviously, it is a game that seemingly the Packers should win, which would guarantee them a playoff spot coming up Monday night at Lambeau Field. We'll get to that. But a couple of guys I want to ask you about coming off of the Seattle win. You mentioned the first one, that first drive. Josh Jacobs after Josh Jacobs after Josh Jacobs after Josh Jacobs. I seemingly ask you about him every week and what he gives to this offense. It was especially emphasized, it seemed, not only in that first drive, but throughout the game. Another really good performance for him, just under 100 yards rushing, over 100 all-purpose yards for him in the win over Seattle. I am so terribly impressed with, A, the spark he has provided this Packers offense, especially the last month or two. But number two, Matt LaFleur is not hesitating to use him. It seemed like in the past, we would come on the radio or come on our shows Monday after a Packers win or a loss and say, why did they get away from using Aaron Jones? Or why didn't they use Aaron Jones more? That has not been the case with Josh Jacobs. So it seems like there's been a little bit of an involvement with Matt LaFleur's game plan with a stud running back, the way he's utilized Josh Jacobs. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, and it wasn't just Matt LaFleur, right? I mean, in 17 and 18, it was Mike McCarthy,
good
too.
Point.
I mean, they treated Aaron Jones like he was the leg lamp in A Christmas Story. Fragile. I think that says fragile. Must be Italian. So, look, I don't think they're entirely wrong, right? I mean, if you give Aaron Jones the same number of carries that you're giving Josh Jacobs, his durability probably isn't the same. And I say that as someone who loves Aaron Jones as a player, as a guy to cover. Like, he is a really good football player and an even better teammate and dude. And so I certainly wasn't in favor of his replacement, but I look at Josh Jacobs and I see a guy that's another level, just a different type of player. And, you know, Matt LaFleur, from the very moment they got him, said he was a high volume back, and he has treated him as such. They have not hesitated to give him the football, whether it's Jordan Love at quarterback or the games that Malik Willis played, right? So, look, I think he has just added a dimension that is totally different. And it, you know, I always bring this up because I think it's important. You know, when Jordan Love played so well down the stretch last year, you know, 18 touchdowns, one pick, 70% completion percentage, two other things were happening there. One, their offensive line was playing really well. And two, in those eight games, five of the eight, Aaron Jones ran for 100 yards.
Bingo.
So, you know, those things make life so much easier for your quarterback, and now they're happening again, and you're seeing the results. I mean, Jordan Love's completed 68.7% of his passes in the last five games. I think he's thrown 8 or 9 touchdowns against one interception. His passer rating is 119, so it's Toyota-thon all over again. But I don't credit the car maker. I credit the pieces around him, and I credit Jordan Love for being healthy. But the biggest piece to me is Josh Jacobs.
Yeah, I fully agree with you, and it's a good point. Our buddy Rob Domofsky always says, you know, this is my simplest analysis on football. you do things in the beginning of the game to open things up for later in the game. And it seems like the Packers recently have subscribed to a healthy dose of Josh Jacobs early, which allows Jordan Love to start the way he did against Seattle. I think he started 9 of 9 before throwing an incomplete pass on Sunday night. So that was, to me, the best start in terms of an offensive performance. And if this team can get an early start where they're scoring, whether that's a touchdown or a field goal, early and often on their first couple possessions, they're going to be in every game they play, right? I think that was their big miss against Detroit in that loss a couple weeks ago, was they didn't score on any of their first three possessions. They went punt, fumble in their first three possessions against Detroit. They lose that game by 3 points. So if they would have started the way they did against Seattle, they would have won that game on the road at Detroit. So that was a that was an important and impressive turnaround with the early start that I think if they continue to do that, every game they're going to play, they're going to be in if they can get on the board with an early start, which they did in Seattle.
Yeah, and look, I want to see what they do in Minnesota. Like, I'm not looking past this game. All right, maybe a little bit I am.
All right, a little bit, yeah.
But, you know, I don't know if they're going to cover. I'm not a betting man, so I don't really worry about that sort of thing. I am always leery of double-digit spreads in the National Football League because, you know, any given Sunday. But I fully expect them to win to get to 11-4, and then I want to see what they do against Minnesota in Minnesota. And the formula that you just outlined strikes me as a formula that travels to Minnesota and to wherever you're playing in the playoffs. So you want to keep doing that, obviously. And if they can, they're a dangerous team. There's no doubt about it.
I'm with you on that. Let's go to the defensive side of the football, because for the second time this season, rookie linebacker Edgerrin Cooper has been named the NFC Defensive Player of the Week. 7 tackles, a team high for him against Seattle. 2 quarterback hits, 2 pass deflections, 2 tackles for loss, an interception, and a sack, his final stat line against Geno Smith and Sam Howell in that game against the Seattle Seahawks. He only played 58% or 68% of the snaps, or 58% of the snaps?
I don't know. He only played like 35 out of the 59 snaps. So I think that's more like 58%
of the snaps. He has been a stud. And now it seems to me, Jason, and we've talked about him before, where you viewed it as, yeah, he's really good. He's really athletic. He's making good plays. But he's still a rookie, and he's still making rookie mistakes. So that's why they've limited his snap count. Are we getting to a point where he's going to graduate to, yeah, pretty much at all times, he's got to be on the field given what he did last week against Seattle?
Yeah, hold on just a second. I'll be right back.
Yes, sir.
Be right back.
Okay.
Hey. What are you doing?
Recording stopped.
Are you being a crazy dog? Say hi to Strolf. Hi to Strolf.
Hi, puppy.
I don't want to be on TV, guys. All right, lay down, you crazy lady. All kinds of madness going on around here. Stella getting all fired up. She's excited about Edgerrin Cooper,
right,
too.
Rightfully so.
And who isn't, right? The only question I have about Edgerrin Cooper, because I think the coaches have been fairly honest about him, is that he still is a rookie who lines up in the wrong spots, makes assignment errors. And look, I am not in any way trying to downgrade how much of a field tilter he has been, especially in the Jacksonville game. And in this game, no doubt about it. No, I'm not. He is fantastic. Now, do I think Kingsley Enagbare suggesting he's going to be a Hall of Famer feels premature?
Whoa.
Yeah.
I missed that quote.
Do I think Chris Collinsworth repeatedly saying on the broadcast that he will be a star is a little bit premature? Yes. If he's right, you know he's going to brag about that, but if he's wrong, we'll never hear it again, right? But he looks like a really, really good young player who is doing all the things that too many linebackers in Packers history have not done, right? He is a playmaker. He's a guy that he can cover, he can rush, he can fill a hole and tackle in the gap on a running back. Like, he does all those things. And my question is, will he still do that if you play him all 59 snaps as opposed to 35. I mean, what's crazy about this is that both times he's won Defensive Player of the Week, it's not like he played every snap.
No.
You know, don't count the snaps. Make the snaps count. And he has done that. So, look, I think he's fantastic. I've been really impressed with him. You know, he missed time in training camp with an injury. Then he had the hamstring now. Like, he's had some kind of bumps in the road. But there's no denying that he has been an impact player for them. And if he can continue to do that, I would say that that makes this defense pretty darn dangerous. And we'll see if he can continue this.
Yeah. How do you utilize him if you're Jeff Hafley going forward? Is that a guy where it's circled on your call sheet? It's circled on your game plan where Edrin Cooper needs to be on the field now? Or is it still to the point where, I mean, you mentioned it before, lining up in the wrong spots, making the rookie mistakes. Is he a guy where it's going to be that 60%, 65% of the snaps he'll be out there? To me, it almost feels like malpractice, given how effective he's been at later points in the season, to take him off the field, because he's been debatably outside of what, Xavier McKinney, your best playmaker defensively.
Well, we're going to find out this week.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, they're not going to have Quay Walker. I mean, when Matt LaFleur says something is week to week, that is his way of saying this guy ain't playing this week.
Got it.
And so if Quay Walker doesn't play, you know, I don't think Edrin Cooper is prepared to be the green dot guy, right? I mean, let's not forget, too, what's even more impressive about what he did in Seattle is that the dude was coming off of missing three games with his hamstring injury. Like, usually, especially a young player who's missed time, I mean, you saw it with Devontae Wyatt, right? Devontae Wyatt got off to a good start, right? Productive, had a bunch of sacks early. Hurts his ankle, misses 3-4 games, comes back, and he's a non-factor.
Right.
He finally had a sack in the game in Seattle. And so I wonder, you know, if people are appreciating how hard that is for a guy like Cooper to miss three games as a rookie and then come in there and hit the ground running like that. But I'm eager to see what his playing time looks like on Monday night. I really am, because, you know, is he ready to play, like, you know, 90% of the snaps? What are they going to do at linebacker without Quay Walker? Because, look, and this isn't fair to Quay, because I think Quay has made some strides. But what we've seen from Edrin Cooper is what you wanted to see from Quay, right? That's the stuff that you were hoping you were getting with the 22nd overall pick in 2022. And so far, the playmaking has been very few and far between. And frankly, Edrin Cooper's making it look easy, which it's not. So is he able to sustain that? How much are they going to play him? Those are all storylines for Monday night that I'm curious to see unfurl.
Do you know who becomes the quote-unquote green dot guy when Quay Walker's out? Has anybody asked that question this week?
We haven't talked to anybody this week.
Yeah, your week's all thrown off. I forget about that.
Yeah, this has been – I mean, I managed to conjure up a couple of stories for the State Journal, but, like, literally since the game ended – the post-game locker room, which my colleagues were always good enough to share some quotes from with me. But since they got on the plane from Seattle to while we're recording this, the only person to speak is LaFleur on Tuesday. So not a lot of fresh content, as the kids like to say.
Yeah.
Although Jordan Love was on Rich Eisen's show yesterday. So, hey, we got that going for us. But look, to your point, I think it's either Eric Wilson or Isaiah McDuffie.
Interesting.
Both those guys would be qualified for it. But that is we do have Jeff Hafley tomorrow, I think.
That'd be Friday. A Friday thing rather than a Thursday thing, which it typically
is. It's a Thursday on a Friday. So we'll see what Jeff Hafley has to say about it.
Yeah, report back on that one. I know you can't retroactively add that to the Weekly Wildy episode, but I'll be curious to know who that becomes. Because it seems like Cooper to me, right? He's the best athlete in that room without Quay Walker. McDuffie has been good this year. Wilson is certainly, I don't want to say detrimental, but he's certainly their worst option in pass coverage. And we saw Geno Smith expose him a little bit when he was in coverage over the middle of the field on Sunday. So I'll be curious to see how the snap breakdown.
Yeah, I would just say this. I mean, I don't think that they have any interest in putting the green dot and having to relay the calls from Hafley to the huddle on a rookie.
Yeah.
Because I think that just would slow him down.
No,
so
I agree.
He's not the option.
No, I'm with you. And I think that makes perfect sense. But I was just curious who that would become. All right. We'll get to the New Orleans game. We'll get to 14.5 point favorites. But we do have to talk about this on Weekly Wildy. I know you're super excited about this. Yep, I see the eye roll. Enigma has come out on Netflix, the three-part Aaron Rodgers documentary, highlighting Rodgers' career, his comeback from the Achilles injury, and all the in-betweens. You were referenced in episode number 3, which I finished last night. The long and short of it is he name drops you by name as being the first person to allow him to take back the narrative, meaning your former show Tuesdays with Aaron was his first opportunity to really give his side of things, whether that be on the field stuff, off the field stuff, and all the in-betweens. And obviously that has evolved into doing his weekly appearances on the Pat McAfee show. I know you have a complicated relationship with the quote unquote complicated fella, right? I get that. But I thought to hear your name in the documentary was interesting, and to hear his perspective on, you know, everything that's gone down, the immunized comment, the political career arc he almost went on with RFK. I don't think you've watched the documentary, correct?
I have not.
I don't know that you will. I don't need to know that. But I'm curious on your response. I know you know that you were mentioned in the documentary. I'm just curious your reaction to that.
Yeah, that's nice. I've had a few people mention it. I mean, look, I would say this. Those 4 years were great. Behind the scenes a little bit. I had fellow beat writers who were quite high and mighty, even though I don't think their ethics were very good. They just hid them from the public, who bashed me for doing that. And again, Craig Carmson forced me to do that. I said, look, I can't do this. So we're going to have Steve the Homer True host that every week. And they did like a dry run, and, you know, Rodgers just gave him grief the whole time, and the show was terrible. And so I was basically, look, you have to do this. And, you know, Craig has obviously been incredibly important to my career arc. And so you don't say, no, I'm not doing it. And I'm so glad that he made me do it. I am, because those 4 years were great. And the when the microphones were on were great. When the microphones were off, it was even better. You know, and this is not some sort of a humble brag or whatever it is, but, you know, I think I helped him. You know, I should have charged sometimes for therapy sessions, you know, so he could get certain things off his chest and we could talk through things. And I think I'm a really good listener. I don't have a lot of great skills, but I think that's one of them. And so I cherish that time, frankly. You know, the last show of the season, a couple times we did it here at our house. And like he played hide and seek with the girls. I'll never forget being in the basement and he's chasing them around. You know, they're like 3 and 4 maybe at the time, maybe even younger. And we have these foam tiles that we have down because I'm a helicopter parent and I don't want them to bonk their head on the hard floor. And he goes to push off the chase one of them and the tile goes out from under him. And I'm thinking, oh my God, the reigning NFL MVP is going to tear his ACL in my basement, and then I'm going to have to explain how the hell that happened. So, you know, and Paula tells a great story about him hiding underneath the guest room bed when she hadn't cleaned the floors in a while. So he's like covered in dust and dog hair. And so anyway, my point is that, you know, I really appreciate my relationship with him. I care about him. Frankly, over the last several years, I've worried about him. I've also been really pissed at him. And again, I don't know, you know, he did this on McAfee the other day about how you got to state your vax status before you criticize him. I haven't gotten my COVID booster or my flu shot yet, Aaron, for this year. And I'm a little under the weather, so maybe those things do work. But, obviously Paula was battling breast cancer at the time and had no immune system. So I did not appreciate that. I'm sure Aaron Jones didn't appreciate after his dad died from COVID that Aaron Rodgers was saying some of those things. Now, look, I don't want to turn this into a COVID debate. I'm not interested in that. But what I'm saying is that I thought his approach, especially with unfettered, say whatever he wanted on McAfee, as opposed to me, that if you go back and listen on Wisconsin On Demand, if he said something, I pushed back on him. And that did not, that does not occur today. I just felt like it was more, whether it's informed, uninformed, you could believe whatever you want. My issue with him is it was unkind. It was less thoughtful. And what concerns me about the narrative around him for at least a portion of people is that he's a dick. And the guy that I knew during our time together was the guy who, you know, and then I'll end it after this, but Jordan Love, I was talking to him in the locker room before Seattle. He did a thing where kids could go shopping at Dick's Sporting Goods with him. Well, Dick's Sporting Goods sends out a press release and there's all this media there. Every year, Aaron Rodgers would take a bunch of disadvantaged, underprivileged kids Christmas shopping with no media. Like the first 2 years, I didn't even know what happened.
Oh, wow.
And he would take them to go shopping for their parents or for their siblings, not to get themselves stuff. But and so I choose to remember that guy, and I don't recognize the guy he has. And he, look, he gets to be whoever he wants to be. Mm-hmm. He does not need my permission.
Mm-hmm.
But I would be curious if his journey that he is on, that is chronicled in Enigma, will bring him back to some of those things that he was then. You know, the guy that, you know, and I didn't tell this story for many years, but the guy that I was supposed to go out to dinner with after the season ended in Arizona after the 09 season to talk about the season and just, you know, kind of a beers on the table type of conversation that was off the record. And I had to cancel because Maddie was being born. So Paul is in labor and I'm texting him saying, hey, I got to cancel tonight. You know, the baby's here. And he shows up at the maternity ward. You know, I mean, that's the guy that I remember. And my caring about him, Paul always teases me about whether it was girlfriends before her or other people, that I don't give up on people, except maybe my family. And so I need to, it's hard for me to do that. And so I haven't given up on him, but I can't, that's why I've taken a lot of grief for saying I'm not going to watch it, but I wish people would understand it's just different for me. Like, I don't give a damn that my name is mentioned like that. I don't care about that. I really don't. Like, that's not fake humility. I don't care. Somebody said that there's a picture of us talking or something.
Yep.
My question is, how fat do I look? Like, that's what I'm worried about. So that's not what matters to me. And I, someday when he's all done playing, there are things I would like to get off my chest. There are things that I would like to work through with him because I do care about him. But the bottom line is, you know, this is what friendship is supposed to be. Like, if you care about someone, you don't stop caring about them just because they take a path that you don't agree with. And I hope at some point we can talk about those things because, you know, I will close by saying this. I think there's a couple of people that have been in his life, Tom Fanning from Packers PR, myself, maybe a few others, that were not yes men to him. And I think all of us need people that will push back on us and tell us, hey, maybe this isn't such a good idea. And I think we all need that person in our lives.
Yeah, I think it should be noted. As you bring up Tom Fanning, that is the other guy he mentions by name as somebody that held him accountable. And I think that's what, at least to me, that was my perception of it. That was important to him. And, you know, this documentary, for somebody that has listened to every word Aaron Rodgers has said for the last 5 years, essentially, given the line of work we're in, I still learned some stuff. And it humanized him more than I think maybe he has humanized himself the last couple of years. And it was a really interesting watch. So if anybody's listening or watching this and hasn't seen it yet, I would recommend. Jason, I know it's a little bit different for you, but I appreciate the vulnerability and the insight into your relationship with him. Because as somebody that is name dropped first and last name in the documentary, I was curious on your perspective. So I appreciate you sharing it. Backwards hat guy. Okay, let's get back to Packers Saints coming up Monday night at Lambeau Field. As you mentioned earlier, Packers are 14.5 point favorites. That is a huge line. Vegas might know something we don't, but 14.5, so you might want to fix the tag there on your new hat.
Yeah, I got it.
Yeah, you gotcha. 14.5 points seems outrageous, even though I know the Saints are not very good and the Packers seemingly might be peaking at the right time. What do you make of the point spread? 14.5 is nuts to me.
Yeah, I always say those guys in the desert know what they're doing. I guess they're not all in the desert now. Now they're everywhere.
Yeah, they're everywhere.
But I don't want to disparage anyone. I'll just say that I don't have any interest in that. But it is interesting when the numbers are like that and then things go awry, right? I mean, ask Chewy. 12.5 point favorites in the Super Bowl.
Yep.
Maybe they win 42-10, right? I can totally see that. I don't see a scenario where they lose at home, but I see a scenario where it's uncomfortably close and the folks that took the Packers giving the points are going to be nervous at the end of the game, where maybe those of us that are writing our game stories are able to just say, okay, they're going to win this. I've got my narrative.
Yep.
But the Saints are in shambles, right? I mean, they fired their coach. Derek Carr is not available. Do we even know who's starting at quarterback? Is it Spencer Rattler or the other guy? Like, I don't even know who
We do not know. Jake Haener, I think, is his name.
Yeah. So, again, I don't know how it's going to play out on Monday night, but I thought it was interesting. Remember, ESPN now has the flexibility to flex Monday night games. That is an option for them. And, our guy Domofsky, who we love and who works for the big ESPN, said, look, there's no way ESPN's going to give up their only game they have, the Packers. And he was right. But, I mean, I don't think they're super enthralled with the idea of a nearly 15-point spread for their game.
Right.
They'd like something a little more competitive. So we'll see how it plays out. But, look, this is beyond the old homerism of if you are the team you think you are, this is the game you win.
No.
This is how much are we – here's the question I have. Tuesday is Christmas Eve, mm-hmm. and we're going to do a show, much to Paula's chagrin, and because it's the day after a game, and it's our responsibility for our fans. That said, am I going to spend the entire 3 hours of Wildy and Tausch taking calls from pissed off fans who can't believe they only won by 10? And are we going to spend the entire show nitpicking on how poorly they played against an overmatched opponent? Like, the only way that you feel good on Tuesday morning, other than knowing that the big fella in the red suit is coming, is, well, they beat him 42-10, they blew him out, and now it's on to the Vikings on a short week on the road, right? I mean, anything else, like, to me, I don't care, and I don't tell Packers fans how to feel, but I would say get out of this game against the crappy team without anybody getting hurt, and that's a win. I don't care if it's by 1 point or 100 points. The biggest thing now, ask the Detroit Lions,
yep.
The biggest thing is staying healthy. And it would be ideal if you have Jordan Love out of the game early in the third quarter and you got Emmanuel Wilson toting the mail instead of Josh Jacobs, and you got Malik Heath and Bo Melton out there instead of Christian Watson, getting spiked on a play late in the game and you're worried about him being injured.
No, I fully agree with you on that. So just get the job done, get yourself in the postseason, and stay healthy. Packers, in terms of playoff teams, tied for the second least amount of players on IR, only behind the Bills, who only have 3 players on IR. Packers with 5, as are the Vikings. Lions, for context, the most in the league.
21!
22 now, with David Montgomery getting added.
Is he officially on now?
I don't know if he's officially on, but I'm counting that one, because I saw the stat of 22, so... ridiculous.
Sucks to be them.
Sucks to be them. As for the Packers, not so much. You can get Jason on social at Jason J. Wildy. We will discuss all things Packers Saints during Green Bay game day on Monday, which you can begin watching at 4 o'clock, the Jason Wildy Hour, 5 o'clock from just outside Lambeau Field. And we will do this again after the holiday. Jason, happy holidays. Appreciate the time as always. We'll do this again next week.
You do such a good job, Strofe. I appreciate you, buddy. Thanks.
Thanks, Jason. Bye.